Hello, once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. It's bettingbook.com's MLB betting podcast for Thursday, August 3rd. I'm your host, Adam Burke. Glad to be bringing you another segment here of baseball betting insight and analysis. This edition of the Bettors Box is presented by DSI Sportsbook. We've got a new promo code here for you over at DSI. That is the promo code BTB25, the number 25. That'll give you a $25 free bet just for signing up. And then an additional 100% deposit bonus for the sportsbook and 100% deposit bonus for the live casino if you do decide to put some money over there. I've talked about this in the past here, but they've got a new redesign over there. They're now independent from the Chris family of books, so another book to shop around at. And look, this is an A-plus rated sportsbook with over 20 years in business, user-friendly mobile site. You know, you got Mayweather, McGregor coming up, NFL, college football, NBA, and college basketball aren't that far behind. So if you don't have an account over at DSI, you certainly want to make sure that you get one. And this BTB25 promo code is a really, really great opportunity for you. Just a 10x rollover on that sportsbook bonus. So that's one of the lowest in the industry. Very competitive there with that. So over there at DSI Sportsbook, that promo code BTB25, that's a winner for you. That might be your first winner of the football season, is to head on over there and check that out. And speaking of the football season, kind of incredible that tonight is the first preseason game. Truthfully, I didn't even realize that the game was tonight. Somebody else wrote that preview over there at the website, but I was looking around today and saw that the Cardinals and the Cowboys get things going here this evening in Canton, Ohio, just a stone's throw away from me. So, hey, I mean, it's live football. I really don't know who's going to play and how long they're going to play, but it's live football. So, hey, for anybody that wants to get involved, certainly keep it responsible here. There's absolutely no reason to go crazy with the first preseason game of the year. But if you are interested in getting involved with that, we do have a preview over there at bangthebook.com. And on next week's shows, we'll be talking about some NFL preseason betting strategies, also taking a look at some teams that you may want to back here as we get closer to the start of the season. I guess it's a good time to bring up the fact that we are going back to our daily format next week. We're going Monday through Thursday next week. We'll go the full 5 days the following week. As I mentioned already, I'm getting married next Friday, so I'm not going to be doing a show that day. We'll probably push the timeline for Wednesday and Thursday shows up a little bit. I've already spoken with Brad Powers and Ralph Michaels, who I'll be chatting with on Thursday. Probably going to push that show up an hour, friends and family in town, picking people up from the airport, all that type of stuff. So as far as next week goes, we'll be live from 11 to 12 Monday, Tuesday. Wednesday will be a little bit earlier. Thursday will be a little bit earlier, and then no show on Friday. And then we'll go the full 5 days, pretty much regular 11 to 12 o'clock window from that point forward. Things may change a little bit based on availability for our guests and, of course, the Thanksgiving weekend and stuff like that. But for our listeners that have been with us throughout the summer, I just want to thank you so much for that. I know the summertime can be a little bit challenging as a handicapper because a lot of people don't like to bet baseball. And to be completely honest with you, this year I don't really like to bet baseball with the way that things have been going. But, you know, I know that football drives the bus in this industry. So hopefully those of you that haven't been with us come back. Those of you that have been with us, stick with us here throughout the football season. But on a personal level, I cannot thank you enough because a lot of the shows over the summer are just listening to me ramble about Major League Baseball, doing the Bettors Box twice a week, doing the Tuesday Takeover show where I, you know, happen to be able to get a guest on here for us and we chat about some different things. But, you know, the summertime, it's really just baseball. And, you know, as we get closer to the football seasons, we start talking about some more prep work for that. But it's been a lot of me over the summer. And for those of you that have stayed on, have listened throughout, I absolutely cannot thank you enough. You guys are the reasons why I have the ability to do the job that I do each and every day, whether it's writing stuff, whether it's recording stuff, whether it's just bantering with listeners and my, you know, network of friends and colleagues on Twitter. It's all because of you guys. So I cannot thank you enough for everything that you do for me, for what you do for bangthebook.com. It means the world. And this is a good time for me to take a chance to reflect on that, you know, because things do go back to a little bit more of a normal state, you know, with having the different guests on next week. So thank you so much to everybody that stayed with me throughout the Bettors Box here. And as I mentioned on Monday's show, we will be keeping the Bettors Box around. It's something that we'll do here on Wednesdays and Fridays on Bang the Book Radio, you know, so long as we don't have other guests that we want to bring onto the program. because baseball season is still going, and we will be getting closer to the playoffs. We'll have the playoff chases here once we get into the month of September. So there are still people that are going to be playing baseball games and still people that are going to be looking for value with those. Predominantly, we'll be looking at football, but we'll mix in baseball and, of course, throw in some NHL and NBA and college basketball, you know, as all that stuff gets closer to ramping up. But we will be on every day here starting in 2 weeks' time, but Monday through Thursday for next week. Don't forget about all the great written content over at bangthebook.com. I've got that article titled Important 2017 College Football Season Links or whatever it says there. That's got links to all of our season win total picks and previews, the Bang the Book radio broadcast that we've done with college football in mind, some general analysis pieces. I handicap the new coaches. I handicap teams that are going through some scheme and tempo changes. All of that stuff critically important to you. And then we've also got NFL season win totals from another one of our writers, Lyle Harrison, has been writing some previews with that. So we've got tons and tons of football content for you. I've already written up the Xfinity Series and NASCAR for this weekend. The WGC Bridgestone started already, but you know, there's some additional analysis there if you're looking to make some matchup plays or something else throughout the course of the tournament. So plenty of great content over there at bangthebook.com for you to check out. One final thing here before we get into our bettors box format, that is those contests that are available over there at the website. Our daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, monthly top win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. Cash prizes available for all of those. No purchase necessary. So make sure you head on over to bangthebook.com, sign up, and get involved with those. All right, traditional show format here today. We'll go beyond the box score, then down the lines, give you a pick for Thursday night, but then what I'm looking at here for the weekend. I think the best place to start here for today is to wrap up the trade deadline. So obviously we're about 3 days away from when trades stopped happening, and I got a chance to talk about some of them on Monday's show. Like I mentioned, I was a little bit distracted trying to follow Twitter, see what was going on, see if anybody was actually on the move of significance while I was recording the show. It wound up being a very dull trade deadline. Yeah, there were some big deals. Sonny Gray was on the move to the Yankees. Yu Darvish on the move pretty much right at the buzzer to the Los Angeles Dodgers. But a lot of the names that were discussed didn't go anywhere. You know, you look at some of the big bullpen names that were talked about, Brad Hand, Trevor Rosenthal, neither one of those guys moved, although Rosenthal was obviously a very long shot to move. But some of the rental pitchers, Lance Lynn didn't go anywhere, Marco Estrada didn't go anywhere. You know, it was just one of those deadlines where it felt like a lot of teams that were in the hunt just didn't want to give up prospects. And that's totally understandable. And when you look at what's going on in free agency, when you look at some of the contracts that are coming up, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, Mike Trout's going to get some significant money here sometime soon as well. You know, you've got some guys that are $350, $400 million free agents. And you have other guys, you know, like a Madison Bumgarner, for example, another guy that's going to get a big deal here down the line a little bit. You know, you're going to have a very, very inflated market, because what's going to happen is these agents are going to look and say, okay, I don't have Bryce Harper. My guy's still pretty good. I want my guy to get $200 million or $225 million or whatever the case may be. So the fact that the perennial contenders that have a lot of money also have pretty decent farm systems means that they want to hang on to those guys. They want those guys that are cost-controlled at the league minimum for the first 3 years. Then you start arbitration. That's very, very important for a lot of teams out there. And especially because when you look around the current landscape of Major League Baseball, look at how many under 25 superstar players we've got. Now, this doesn't mean that all prospects that are highly touted are going to become superstars, but what it does mean is that you have a situation now where, you know, you're getting to the big leagues quicker, which means you're hitting free agency quicker and you're getting those big paydays quicker. So, you know, teams want to capitalize when they do have prospects that they can keep at those low salaries and get a lot of production from them. So it felt like in a lot of cases, with a lot of these big names, teams just weren't willing to give up, you know, the necessary prospects, the necessary futures in order to get deals done. And it was even reported that, you know, and I think probably the best example of this, I'll just go ahead and get into this, is the trade for Sonny Gray. So the Yankees pick up Sonny Gray, okay? They don't give up Gleyber Torres. They don't give up Clint Frazier. They didn't give up Chance Adams. They gave up Dustin Fowler, who's coming back from a major knee surgery. James Kaprielian, who's coming back from Tommy John surgery, and then Jorge Mateo, who's a high-floor player We don't know exactly what his max upside is yet. He's a safe player for an acquiring team, but the Yankees were very clear in saying, we do not want to give up our absolute top prospects. And they didn't do it. And the A's caved. Now, for the A's, obviously this deal makes some sense for them because they get a lot of upside. There's tons of risk in this deal. Don't get me wrong. I don't love this deal for the A's because they let themselves get pushed off of top prospects. I think this is a return that they probably could have gotten in the wintertime. They wanted to pull the trigger now. They had lots of offers. I don't think they wanted to keep Sonny Gray in limbo and you know, have Sonny Gray pitch out the rest of this season knowing that, you know, a trade's coming in the winter. And also, Sonny Gray has had some injury problems. So, you know, if the A's did hold on to him, waited until the winter, let's say something went wrong in late August or early September, then all of a sudden you take some of your leverage away because you're trading even more damaged goods. Now, here's where I don't really like the deal for the A's, okay? So Dustin Fowler is a good hitter, very good hitter, but he's got an extremely low walk rate in the minor leagues. He's got good contact rates, but a very low walk rate. What that means is this is a guy that gets on base via his legs. 18, 12, 25, and 13 stolen bases over the last 4 years, lives on a high BABIP profile, lives off of that speed. He's coming off of a severe knee injury. That is a big red flag. Those are some significant risk factors for me for Oakland. Now, if Dustin Fowler was healthy and hadn't gotten hurt there in his major league debut, is he a player that's available for Oakland at this point in time? I don't know. Is New York more likely to trade Clint Frazier? I don't know. But what I do know is that when you get a guy that has to live off of his legs and he suffers an injury to the degree that Fowler did, that's concerning to me. So I don't necessarily love that grab for Oakland. And then, of course, James Caprellian, again, a situation where you're getting a guy coming off of Tommy John. Now, a lot of pitchers have had Tommy John, and I think we take for granted, you know, what the success rate is of Tommy John surgery, of post-Tommy John rehab. You know, you're still far more likely to have a second procedure if you have a first one. So that's something that has to be a consideration here for the A's. Obviously, there's a ton of upside here in this kid, but again, damaged goods. You know, and you have a situation here where now you transfer his rehab over to Oakland, their trainers, their medical staff, how do they handle it? How well do they do with it? You know, and then you have to hope that he can come back next year and be a factor. Now, of course, the A's won't be a factor next season, so you're probably looking at 2019. But still, you know, a situation where now you have to hope that everything goes correctly. I mean, yeah, a lot of guys do come back from Tommy John. There are some that don't. And a lot of the guys that do come back from Tommy John don't come back to the same level that they were, or it takes a while for them to get to that point. So we'll see how that addition works out for the A's. And again, Jorge Mateo may be the best player in this deal just because he has a very high floor. He's a good defensive player, great base runner, can play several different positions. You know, as long as he's going to make contact with his speed, he's going to make things happen. Also, this year he's had a little bit more power to his repertoire. So that was a guy with a rising stock, and you know the A's did well to get him in the deal. And I honestly think that was probably the guy that they keyed in on the most. The other two guys, they're happy to get. They're happy with the upside. They understand the risk factors. But I think Mateo is the guy that they really wanted the most. Now, as far as this deal goes for the Yankees, it is phenomenal. This is a home run deal for the New York Yankees. You've got an easy fill-in for CeCe Sabathia or Michael Pineda next season at a very reasonable cost. You obviously have a fill-in for Pineda here for this season as well. You know, you've got Chance Adams sitting there in the minor leagues. You've still got Chad Green, who's got great stuff. The Yankees are in very good shape, not just for this season, but also for next season when it comes to the starting rotation, even with Michael Pineda out of the picture. So this is a great, great move for them. Now, there are probably some people that have concerns about the small sample size noise with the home road splits for Sonny Gray. Now, Sonny Gray has thrown a lot more innings at home than he has on the road, which is very fair to point out because now he goes to Yankee Stadium, much, much better hitter's park than O.co Coliseum. Also, instead of pitching on the road in Seattle and Anaheim, now he pitches on the road in Fenway and Camden Yards and Rogers Center. You know, these are all much better offensive parks. So I think that the expectations for Sonny Gray probably should be lowered a little bit because this is a significant difference in park factor. Now, on the other hand, it's a significant upgrade defensively because the biggest problem for Sonny Gray this season is his left on base percentage. Balls in play are a tricky thing when it comes to the Oakland Athletics. The Yankees are not a great defensive team by any means, but they're an upgrade to Oakland. Oakland is the worst team in the league defensively. The Yankees are around 18, 19, 20, somewhere in there if you look based on defensive runs saved. So again, it's not a massive upgrade, but it's a significant upgrade nonetheless. So that's a big deal for Sonny Gray. That's something that should definitely help him. And then, of course, he's got arguably the best bullpen in Major League Baseball sitting behind him. So this was a great deal for the Yankees. They kept the guys they wanted to keep. They got a guy that's going to be very affordable over the next 2 years while he goes through the arbitration process. Great, great deal for them. We saw Yu Darvish on the move, very, very close to 4 o'clock. Yu Darvish, in fact, posted on Twitter, posted a selfie in the Texas Rangers clubhouse saying 10 minutes, he was still there. Well, he wasn't there by the end of the day. Look, I don't think I can come up with enough adjectives to talk about this Dodgers team. I mean, we've all seen what they've been doing. We've all been following the standings. We all know what's going on. But in the playoffs now, you run into some combination of Clayton Kershaw, Yu Darvish, Alex Wood, Rich Hill. I mean, they could even use Kenta Maeda in an NLCS or in a World Series. Hyunjin Ryu, Brandon McCarthy. I mean, they've got great bullpen arms. It's unbelievable. It's absolutely incredible. I'll say this, though. Every team, I don't care how good they are, every team is an underdog to the field when it comes to the playoffs, and a significant underdog at that. So, yes, the Dodgers are awesome. Yes, their starting rotation is absolutely phenomenal on paper and in the numbers. Their bullpen is very, very good. Their lineup is exquisite. Their depth is probably the best in the National League. But they're not a lock. Nobody is a lock. Still an underdog to the field. So while the Dodgers obviously look like the team to beat, and no one's going to argue with that point, in the playoffs, in that 19-game tournament where variance reigns supreme, anything can happen. But what I do like about this is if you're the Dodgers, money is clearly no object. I mean, it hasn't been for a long time. Why not go get Yu Darvish? You can give up the prospects necessary to get a guy like Yu Darvish, and they did in this deal. Now, they did actually keep some of their better prospects in this deal. I mean, it's just a two-month rental for Darvish. But you know, go out here and get everything you can. Because the one thing that buying does is it's an effort to limit variance as much as possible. What are the chances that Clayton Kershaw and Yu Darvish and Alex Wood are all terrible in a playoff series? Very, very low. And even add Rich Hill into the mix. Very, very low. So you cover some of your bases in that respect by just getting stronger. That's really what you want to do. You try to limit variance. You try to make yourself as good as you possibly can in hopes that things do work out for you. And also a guy like Darvish has a greater margin for error than, you know, say somebody like a Trevor Bauer. You know, I mean, a guy like Darvish, even if he's not sharp, the stuff is phenomenal to the point where he can still get by. A guy like Trevor Bauer, if he's not sharp, you may be down 6-0 three innings into the game. So that's where it kind of comes in for the Dodgers, and they're doing exactly what they should do by completely going for this thing when they have certainly what looks like their best shot in quite some time. Lots of other moves here, none of them as significant as those two to pick up starting pitchers. We saw Brandon Kinsler go from the Twins to the Nationals. That helps out both teams. The Twins need to get some pitching prospects, need to get some position player prospects in that system. Kinsler going to Washington just gives Dusty Baker another arm to misuse. So, hey, at least from a depth standpoint, the Nationals have a lot going for them there. David Hernandez went back to Arizona. Addison Reed is a pretty big one going from the Mets to Boston. Joe Kelly is hurt. They were limited in terms of the number of right-handed bridges that they had to Craig Kimbrell. Addison Reed fills that role very, very nicely. We'll see how he does being back in the American League, but that was a move that was definitely needed for Boston, and I'm not surprised that they grabbed him. I talked about the Justin Wilson to the Cubs deal earlier on Monday's show. Joe Smith going back to Cleveland. This was a much-needed acquisition for the Indians as well. Brian Shaw in the midst of a big-time collapse, second lowest strikeout percentage in July among relief pitchers with at least 10 innings pitched. Now Andrew Miller on the shelf. The Indians needed Joe Smith. They needed some more bullpen arms. I'm upset that they didn't get Brad Hand. Now, I don't know what the Padres were asking for Brad Hand, so I guess I can't be that upset about it. However, if they knew Andrew Miller was hurt and Andrew Miller goes on the DL 2 days after the trade deadline, that's a move you should probably make, especially because Hand controlled through 2019, which gives you a year post Andrew Miller to where you have your bullpen situation a little bit figured out. Francisco Liriano goes to the Astros to be a loogie, a lefty, one out guy. Tony Watson and Tony Cingrani both to the Dodgers. Same thing. Dodgers just trying to bolster their bullpen, get as many matchup guys as they possibly can. Jeremy Jeffress goes back to the Brewers. The Brewers just trying to hold on right now, trying to find something to help out that bullpen. And Jeffress is a guy familiar with the organization. You know, they probably didn't really want to give him up in that Lucroy deal. Now they're able to get him back. Joaquin Benoit is an interesting little piece going to Pittsburgh. He could get spun again here as a waiver trade, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. His season numbers aren't great, but since he came off the DL, he's actually looked pretty good. Three really interesting deals here to wrap up this segment. Nori Aoki goes to Toronto. That's in the Francisco Liriano deal. They also picked up Teoscar Hernandez, which I really like both of those acquisitions for Toronto. They give themselves some more depth at the corner outfield positions. I like what they did at the deadline. You know, Aoki is a controlled guy. Hernandez is a controlled guy. They picked up Thomas Pannone from the Indians in the Joe Smith deal. Pannone projects as a back end of the rotation starter. That's a really good pickup for a two-month rental in a guy like Joe Smith. So I really like what Toronto did. I'm sure their fans weren't excited that they were a seller, and they probably could have moved more if they had gotten a good offer for Jay Happ. But, you know, they want to make a run next year, and they've acquired depth. Depth is important. Those were some good deals for them. Tim Beckham to the Orioles was very, very strange, very interesting here. I guess he just wasn't a good fit in Tampa, but the Orioles were kind of buyers here because they picked up Tim Beckham and also got Jeremy Hellickson, who was great in his first start, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But interesting to see those two deals there with Beckham and Hellickson going to Baltimore. Second wildcard race is going to be a whole lot of fun. There are going to be a lot of teams in the mix for that thing. It certainly looks like that'll be one that'll go down possibly to 163rd game. But, you know, again, I think the biggest story of the trade deadline to me, in part because the Indians should have been a player, is that Brad Hand didn't go. I mean, the volatility of relievers from year to year is just so significant. Lots of suitors saw what the Indians did last year with the Shaw, Miller, Allen in the back end of the bullpen. The Padres didn't cave, though, and I think that they probably should have. And, you know, as I was kind of writing up some notes here, I thought maybe Oakland could have held on and San Diego could have fired. But as I thought more about it, you know, if Sonny Gray gets hurt, like I said, the A's lose a lot of value in him if he gets hurt again. For Brad Hand, his value, in my mind, was never going to be any higher. You know, you had a lot of teams going for him, a lot of teams that are very interested in bullpen spending and bullpen acquisition. Again, you saw last year what the Indians did. You see what the Yankees are doing this year. Brad Hand should have been traded. Padres didn't get what they wanted. I don't know if they're ever going to get what they wanted, and I'm pretty sure if he gets dealt this winter, a lot of the people out there that cover baseball are going to say, this feels like a return you could have gotten at the trade deadline, or you could have gotten a better return at the trade deadline. So we'll see how that all plays out, but it's not like the Padres have a sterling front office anyway. So we'll just have to see how everything goes there with Brad Hand. All right, we'll go beyond the box score here. Look at few series that happened earlier in the week. The Tigers took 2 out of 3 from the New York Yankees. The Yankees offense continues to struggle. You know, this is a group that's been very up and down, very inconsistent. Obviously, Aaron Judge has not been good since the All-Star break. There were times where he was carrying this offense prior to the All-Star break. They got 7 runs in Monday's game, but they only had 3 at-bats with a runner in scoring position. Had some very, very timely extra base hits there. 3 runs on Tuesday, no runs on Wednesday. Of course, because I have no idea what's going on in baseball this year. They knock around Michael Fulmer and then can't hit Anibal Sanchez or Jordan Zimmermann over the last 2 games of this series. So I don't know. I'm at a loss for words sometimes with what goes on in Major League Baseball. But the Yankees were just 2 for 18 with runners in scoring position over the last 2 games in this series. And, you know, I was kind of looking at lineup construction because when I see something like that, I start looking at the lineup and I start saying, okay, are the right guys getting the right plate appearances in the right situations? And there's no way of knowing that before a game, obviously. But the fact that Jacoby Ellsbury is hitting second with a .248 average and a .328 on base percentage and a .357 slugging percentage makes no sense to me. I know some guys are out. I know Starlin Castro's hurt. But the Yankees in Wednesday's game had 5 guys in the lineup with on-base percentages below .330. That's how you struggle. Because hitting comes and goes. If you're able to draw walks, if you're able to get on base, then you set yourself up for a lot more success because, like I said, it's a game of variance and a game of sequencing. The more chances you get with runners in scoring position, the better off you're going to be. And the fact that the Yankees have a lot of low on base percentage guys right now, very concerning to me going forward. They'll still hit for power. They've got a ballpark that's conducive to hitting for power, but it would be really nice to see some guys actually, you know, start to have some better BABIP fortunes or start to walk a little bit more. Otherwise, it's a tough offensive profile to sustain. Just ask the Baltimore Orioles. You know, they've hit for a ton of power, but how much success have they had? You know, hitting for a lot of power, but having a low walk percentage, a low on-base percentage. So we'll see how that whole thing plays out for the Yankees here over the remainder of the season. Tigers struck out 32 times in the three games in this series. As far as I'm concerned, anytime the Tigers are facing an average or above-average right-hander, they are a fade team. Aging bats, declining bat speed. Miguel Cabrera's got a .417 slugging percentage. Nick Castellanos has regressed. Victor Martinez has a .377 slugging percentage. He's over the .385, and he's still leading off. The key contributors for this offense, Justin Upton and J.D. Martinez. Upton's still there. Martinez is not. Those are the guys that would have to pick up the slack for those four that I just mentioned, and only one of them can do it right now, and that's Upton. So unless Cabrera gets it going, which he probably won't, unless Kinsler gets it going, which he probably won't, the Tigers are a fade team against any average or above righty as far as I'm concerned. Another wagering angle with the Tigers, I think, here, I think that they're an under team. And that's really hard to wrap your head around, and I know it's hard for me to wrap my head around sometimes as well, because the starting rotation is bad and the bullpen is not good. And it just got worse with the trade of Justin Wilson. But sometimes perception and reality, you know, don't line up. And obviously there's a perception that this pitching staff is bad. There's a perception that this offense is good. This offense is not good. So I think offenses weighed a lot more heavily in today's run environment than pitching staffs are. So this is a situation to me where we can get some value on the under with Texas, or with Detroit, excuse me, where this is a team that's probably going to, you know, lose some games 6-1, 7-1, 2, stuff like that here over the remainder of this season. But those are still games that stay under the total. So that would be the way that I would look with the Tigers. Fade them against average or better righties and play unders with them. Because, you know, you got some guys in this starting staff that, yeah, they're not very good, but they're veteran guys. And they're able to make adjustments. You know, when young pitchers start to struggle, they kind of bang their heads against the wall and keep trying to do what's worked for them, even if it doesn't work. Anibal Sanchez has been pretty good of late, actually. Jordan Zimmermann's gotten better of late. You know, are they good pitchers? Probably not. But they're willing to make adjustments. They're willing to change some things up. And that's something that I think can be beneficial for us in the betting market. So I think unders are a good look here with the Detroit Tigers moving forward. The Baltimore Orioles swept the Kansas City Royals because baseball makes no sense this year. Ubaldo Jimenez, 7 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts. Dylan Bundy, 8 innings, 3 hits, 1 unearned run, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. Jeremy Hellickson, 7 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts. So the Orioles got 22 innings, 1 earned run from Ubaldo Jimenez, Dylan Bundy, and Jeremy Hellickson in this series. I mean, how can you handicap that? But the market did, because the Orioles were backed twice, in this, actually 3 times, because Jimenez actually got some love there on Monday as well. So the market was right on top of this thing. Now, I don't know if it was a fade of the Royals. I don't know if it was a buy of the Orioles, who, of course, didn't sell at the trade deadline. But Baltimore came out victorious in all 3 of these games. Kansas City got some pretty decent starting pitching in this series as well, but they just did nothing offensively. Lorenzo Cain left with a hamstring injury in the middle game. That's a big problem for them. But there were some silver linings for this one. I did like Ned Yost's use of Melky Cabrera. He hit third in the first 2 games, second in the 3rd game. The thing I didn't like, though, is that he left Alex Gordon in over Jorge Bonifacio. And this is something to watch, because a lot of times managers, you know, they develop rapport with players, they develop relationships with players, and Gordon's a veteran guy. He's given a lot to this organization. Used to be a very, very good player, a 3 or 4 win player every year. He's not anymore. But because there's that relationship there, because he's a veteran guy, Yost is going to keep running him out there. And Gordon even played center field a couple times in this series, and that's a problem. You know, he's been a declining asset in left field for a few years now. putting him in center field is not a good idea at all. So watch out for this. Watch out for this lineup construction and watch out for this defensive positioning for the Royals, especially with Kane on the shelf, because you're probably going to see Alex Gordon in center field, and that's just not good. That is a detriment to Kansas City, especially with a pitch-to-contact pitching staff. That's a problem. That is something that won't move a line necessarily, but it's something that in a practical context is going to negatively impact the Royals. So watch out for that as their lineups come out with Kane hurt, and especially if he goes on the disabled list. Now, on the Baltimore side of things, impressive little run here for them. Manny Machado's gotten it going. Jonathan Scopes had a big breakout year. Chris Davis is back off the DL. He's swinging it well. Tim Beckham seems to like the better hitting environment there in Baltimore. They're a team to look at against pitch-to-contact guys. Jason Vargas, Ian Kennedy. Baltimore doesn't walk. They don't bother trying to walk. But if they get strike throwers with average stuff, like Vargas, like Kennedy, they're going to do what they did. And that's why they had so much success here in this series. So, again, Baltimore is one of those teams that you want to look at on a matchup basis. They're not a team you want to play every day. They're not a team you want to fade every day. But on a matchup basis, when they're facing pitch-to-contact scrubs, they're a team to back. And they were that here in this series. Not to say that Jason Vargas is a scrub, I guess, but that is a guy that people are still looking for regression from. And again, Vargas has been faded in probably 5 or 6 straight starts. And I don't think that that's necessarily going to stop as we move forward. Miami Marlins took 2 out of 3 from the Washington Nationals. Gio Gonzalez, of course, flirted with a no-hitter on Monday because, hey, why not? Because I talked about taking the Marlins team total over. That was a very emotional game for Gio Gonzalez, though. Would have been Jose Fernandez's birthday in Gio's hometown of Miami. The two were good friends. An emotional game there for him. He is a fade candidate on Sunday for the Nationals against the Chicago Cubs. You're going to have to pay a price with John Lester. Gio Gonzalez is a massive fade candidate for me here this weekend and going forward, because he was already a fade candidate given some of the luck metrics that he's put up this year. Interesting series for the Nationals offensively here. Couldn't hit Jose Urena last night, knocked around Chris O'Grady, but then scored nothing in 6 innings off the Marlins bullpen. Actually, Urena was on Monday. Couldn't touch Vance Worley last night. Not a single at-bat with a runner in scoring position last night. 1 on Monday against Urena. Vance Worley had 3 swings and misses in his 7 innings. He only gave up 2 hits. So just one of those series for the Nationals. And this is one of the things I've been talking about here throughout the season, is that these offensive outliers, they're going to regress. And you see that here in a series like this, where the Nationals did nothing against Jose Urena and Vance Worley, two guys that are nobodies. You know, so when you're trying to pinpoint regression, that's the hardest part about this whole thing. If the Nationals face Madison Bumgarner and they don't do anything over 8 innings, that's not a surprise. It lowers their numbers. It brings in some of that regression. But everyone goes, okay, it was Madison Bumgarner. Well, when it's Vance Worley and Jose Urena, that's a little bit of a different story. So I do wonder if the Nationals maybe do drop off a little bit more here offensively because they've just been so good throughout the season. So, again, something you may want to watch for. Team totals with the Nationals are always high. If you want to look to play some of those unders here over the next little while, maybe that could net a nice little boost to your bankroll for you. All right, let's get into our down the line segment here. Talk about some line moves that have happened since we were last on the air. We'll start with Tuesday, that Royals Orioles series. We saw Dylan Bundy go from a virtual money line pick'em to a clear favorite. And again, like I said, Baltimore was steamed in every game in that series, including the Duffy Jimenez game in game 1. So that was a situation where the market felt Baltimore was underpriced. I don't know, again, if it was because they held on to everybody at the deadline or just because they're a better team than they've been throughout the year. Whatever the case may be, the market came in on them. And we'll see what happens now as they try to continue this winning streak that they're on. Saw Chris Sale and the Red Sox get money against Carlos Carrasco and the Indians. Not a surprise. Aces get the steam this year, man. Every time there's an ace on the hill, he's getting money. I was a little bit surprised to see Jimmy Nelson and Milwaukee money hit the market against Carlos Martinez on Tuesday. Wound up being the right side. When I talked about a Brewers series price, I expected them to be an underdog in that game, and they weren't. They were about a minus 115, minus 118 favorite. They still won the game, but you know that was a pretty interesting one there for me. So Chris Archer is a flip favorite over Mike Fiers on Tuesday, And this seems to be a trend with the Houston Astros. When they face really good arms, the markets come in against them. Archer, James Paxton, there was another one, Justin Verlander, I believe it was, in one of their previous games. I don't know if this is a quality of competition argument. I know that Houston was reportedly disappointed with the lack of what they did at the deadline. I know Dallas Keuchel said that some of the effect of disappointment was an understatement or something. I mean, Houston's a very good team. And I saw a lot of commentary on Monday when they were sitting on their hands and not really doing anything. I saw a lot of commentary of people talking about how flawed this team is. And truth be told, I haven't really noticed. I know Carlos Correa's out. I know Lance McCullers has been hurt. Dallas Keuchel's been hurt. I get all of that. But I just chalk that up to, okay, guys get hurt. You know, and this is a team that doesn't really have much to worry about right now. They should be the number one seed in the American League. They're going to win the West by a very large margin. I don't really see those fears necessarily. Maybe I'm missing something. But I feel like once the Astros are at full strength, and they should be, once we get into late September and then on into October, they're still a pretty good team. But again, I saw a lot of people talking about how they have some holes to fill, and maybe they do. You know, maybe they do. But again, when you talk about the Major League Baseball playoffs, you ride your horses. You know, Dallas Keuchel is going to pitch on short rest. Lance McCullers, if he's healthy, is going to pitch, you know, as much as he possibly can. Chris Devinsky is going to be used a ton. So, you know, maybe people are talking about the path to get there. I'm not quite sure. But maybe that's something I need to dig a little bit deeper into. But again, the big thing to take away here for this segment is that Archer and good pitchers have been getting steam against Houston. So the market fade Jeff Hoffman once again of the Colorado Rockies. That's happened in several straight starts. Just keep an eye out for that on the overnights, especially when Colorado's at home. Hoffman was about a minus 150 favorite, closed in the minus 115 range. I believe it was Steven Matz in that one for the Mets, which Steven Matz isn't having a very good year. So that was a significant move, one to definitely take notice of. We saw money come in against Aaron Nola on Tuesday night. That was out west in Anaheim. The market has bet Aaron Nola into a favorite against much better teams here recently, but the market backed Ricky Nolasco in this one. So fade of the Phillies, I guess. Maybe buying some positive regression for Nolasco. I don't know. Market was right, but look, I think the biggest takeaway from a game like this is that when the market is backing a pitcher that sucks, and Ricky Nolasco sucks, you may want to hop on that train. I don't advocate steam chasing. I always advocate handicapping for yourself, but there's something to a move like that. Maybe the books overcompensated for Nola and the exposure that they've had on him here lately. But again, I also looked at it as, if I'm an odds maker or a bookmaker, Aaron Nola or not, I want money on the Phillies because they're bad. They're very bad. Aaron Nola is the kind of guy that could throw a no-hitter over nine innings, and the Phillies would find a way to lose in the 10th. So maybe there was an over-adjustment there to Aaron Nola's number. But again, when you see Ricky Nolasco taking money, when you see bad pitchers like Jeremy Hellickson taking money like he did on Wednesday, you notice those. And you probably want to try to get in on that. It's a tough bet to make, but again, it's happening for a reason. It's a lot like, let's look at, you know, college football, for example. You know, if UAB is taking on steam against Western Kentucky, you know, UAB hasn't had a program for 2 years. They're clearly well behind Western Kentucky from a talent standpoint. But if they're moving 5, 6, 7 points or something like that, there's something to a move like that. And it's kind of a similar thing here with a guy like Ricky Nolasco. Now, Mike Trout back, and obviously he's hitting again. So maybe that was part of it. But still, just a very interesting situation there in that game. On Wednesday, we also mentioned we saw the Hellickson move. That was the right side in all three games, was to move on Baltimore. But how about this Masahiro Tanaka move from minus 210 to minus 290? Now, Tanaka was pretty good, but this was a really weird game. Some long weather delays, started late, finished very late. A weird, weird game. But to see Tanaka go up to almost a $3 favorite at some of the more public shops out there, very significant, given how much he struggled this season. I know he had that great start against Tampa Bay, but man, that was a really, really big move. And at that point, I mean, that's a Jordan Zimmermann buyback spot as far as I'm concerned. I know Jordan Zimmermann's not good, but catching the Tigers at plus 270 against a guy that's, you know, struggled all year, how can you not look at that? So the White Sox get faded. That was Jay Happ and Derek Holland. Jay Happ, who has not pitched very well of late, closed north of a $2 favorite against the White Sox lineup that's been hitting lefties pretty well throughout the season. That tells you something right there. And also the White Sox have not gotten a whole lot of love ever since they traded Jose Quintana. And then, of course, you know, with the move of Melky Cabrera and the bullpen arms, because they've given up almost their entire bullpen. And that's something that I kind of been watching a little bit here. I talked about it with the Yankees in terms of their price adjustments, but these teams that lose a lot of bullpen arms, the market has a hard time pricing them because a lot of lines are predicated on starting pitchers. And excuse me. And when you start taking bullpen arms out of the equation, how do you price that? How do you factor that in? Because, yeah, the White Sox don't have Tommy Conley or David Robertson or Anthony Swarzak. But what if they win 10-2? You know, what if they blow the other starter up? You know, those are all considerations that odds makers have to account for. Whereas we can sit here and look at it and say, okay, if this is a close game, the White Sox are in trouble. And that's probably why we saw such a price adjustment in that game. Zach Godley money came in on the Diamondbacks against Jake Arrieta and the Cubs. I'm mad at myself for skipping that one in the write-up because Zach Godley is seriously underrated. He has had excellent command this season. Absolutely fantastic. And Jake Arrieta has not been fantastic, and the Diamondbacks hit righties really well. That was a spot where I was asleep at the wheel. That was a spot where I've kind of gotten beaten down a little bit by how the baseball season has gone, and I missed out on a play that would have made a lot of sense, would have been a very good value grab. So, again, it's one of those learning situations, and even for me, somebody who's done this for a while, still learning things every day. And that's an example of it there where, you know, I'm looking through the card and I see, okay, Cubs minus 160 or whatever it is. And I'm like, you know, whatever. I'm not going to dig into that game. I should have. Don't cost yourself opportunities by just taking things for granted and overlooking them. I did that in that game. Cost us on the Diamondbacks because that would have been the side I would have taken. And, you know, it's frustrating to have those and give those up when you get some pretty good opportunities. Didn't see a big Andrew Kashner fade on Wednesday. Maybe the market's given up on that one. He pitched well again. At this point, I'm not going to bother with him. You know, I know what should be happening. It's not happening. And whatever. I mean, it is what it is. Just kind of chalk it up as that. Thursday, we're seeing some Michael Wacha money come in on the Cardinals. That's against the Milwaukee Brewers and Matt Garza, who's coming off the DL. Totally agree with that move. Seeing a bit of Reds money come in on Sal Romano. It's against Chad Kuhl there at PNC Park. The Reds have gotten a lot of love throughout the season, really. They've been a team that, you know, has gotten steamed several times over, and they're getting a little bit of that love here today. The White Sox are getting faded again, and I just talked about how bad their bullpen is and how many problems that they have. If you're willing to go and lay minus 270 with Rick Porcello, which is what the line was at Pinnacle and Five Dimes when I put together my notes, you go right ahead, because I'm not going to do it. Porcello's had no command this season at all. Now, Miguel Gonzalez hasn't either, and the Red Sox have a better bullpen than the White Sox, but that's one of those cases where a number looks pretty high. Now, again, if it's moving at Pinnacle, it's a sharp move. Pinnacle has a very sharp clientele. So, obviously, the market thinks that that one is mispriced. And, again, maybe the odds makers haven't fully adjusted to how to rate the White Sox bullpen. Because, again, here's a situation where we're getting a very, very high number to go against the White Sox. Seeing some Trevor Cahill steam as the Royals return home. They'll take on the Seattle Mariners here tonight. Cahill was bad in his first start at Fenway Park. Much different environment. Guy that got a huge lift defensively going from the Padres to the Royals. Not surprised to see that move at all. A couple of moves out west here. We're seeing a Jarrod Eichhoff fade. That's with the Angels getting some love. That's not a surprise. A little bit of a surprise is Kendall Graveman taking on some money. But again, that's against Ty Block and the Giants. The Giants are bad. Ty Block is not very good. Ty Block, one of the lowest-rated starters for most people out there. Kendall Graveman, his first major league start since, I believe, mid-May. Again, not a situation I like to back with guys coming off the DL, but I can understand it because we've seen that fate of Ty Block day after day after day when he pitches. As far as my pick goes here for Thursday night, I'm going to take the Minnesota Twins. I haven't talked about the Twins a ton here on this show. When I have, it's been kind of a negative tone that I've taken with them, but I do like them here tonight. Edelberto Mejia on the hill for the Twins, AJ Griffin making his first start at the major league level since May 26 for the Rangers. Normally a team coming off of a long road trip is a fade spot The Twins are doing that, but I'm happy to fade Griffin here in this spot. Also, the Rangers 25th in WOBA against left-handed pitching. Mejia throws left-handed, and the Rangers have a lot of pull-side contact from their left-handed batters. Target Field is not conducive to left-handed hitters at all. You've got a high limestone wall. Balls hit off the wall, come right back to the outfielder. Doubles become singles. Balls that would have been out in another park, you know, bounce off the wall and maybe a single. So this is not a good ballpark for the composition of the Texas Rangers lineup. Also, Adalberto Mejia, a lefty they haven't seen a whole lot. I like that unfamiliar lefty angle. That is something that I do look to play when the situation lines up. Also, so the Rangers just finished a very emotional homestand. Adrian Beltre gets his 3,000th hit. They trade Yu Darvish. They had a division rival in town when they played the Mariners. I think this is a flat spot going up to Minnesota. You know, I mean, Target Field is a nice facility. There's a lot to do in the city, in the Twin Cities area. But it's not really one of those places I don't think that opposing teams get too excited to go to, especially because the Twins have fallen on some harder times now. They're not the perennial division champion or division contender that they used to be. So I think this is a very flat spot for the Rangers. So I'm adding a lot of things into the handicap of this game. Griffin's rust, the matchup for the Rangers against Mejia, you know, the situational angles. There's a lot of stuff I like about this play here to back the Minnesota Twins tonight. And again, I know that they've had some bullpen shuffling and things of that sort as well. But I just think this is a good spot to take them. So hopefully we get one of these spots that plays out in the proper way for us. All right, a few series to look at here as we preview the weekend ahead. Obviously the big one in my world and really the big one in Major League Baseball, the Yankees and Indians. You got Sonny Gray, Corey Kluber tonight, Jaime Garcia, Trevor Bauer tomorrow, Jordan Montgomery, Danny Salazar on Saturday, Luis Severino, Mike Clevenger on Sunday. The Indians could really use some length from their starting pitchers in this series. They've got the right guy going tonight in Corey Kluber, who I wrote about his numbers in my picks analysis piece today. Video game numbers doesn't even begin to describe. He's putting up like Andrew Miller season numbers in 2 months worth of starts. It's unbelievable. It's absolutely incredible. But he's the right guy to go tonight. After the postponement last night, tired bullpen, you know, for the Indians, as many games as they can get through without situations where Andrew Miller would be needed would be really, really great for them at this point in time. But, you know, these are short games because the Yankees' pen is so good. The Indians, at least from a right-handed standpoint, have a pretty decent bullpen. I'll be curious to see how Terry Francona leverages his relievers against the lefties that the Yankees do have. They don't have a whole lot of them that are a significant concern, I don't think, in this series. But, you know, the Indians still very short on southpaws out there in their bullpen with Boone Logan done for the year and then Miller now on the DL. Indians get two lefties in this series, Jordan Montgomery and Jaime Garcia. So that's a very good thing for them because they've been pretty good against lefties this season. And that's a surprise because, you know, last year they struggled with them. Most switch hitters are much better against right-handed pitching. But the Indians have faced so many of them, it feels like, that, you know, put themselves into a situation where, so they've got two of them coming here in this series. And you know, that's something that will hopefully benefit them, at least for me as an Indians fan. So I think that this series does set up fairly well for them. I still think that both these teams probably split the four games in the series. But again, that Yankees bullpen, this is going to be a very interesting one to see how it's priced because the Indians don't have their dominant bullpen with Miller on the shelf right now. They've got a lot of swing and miss in the rotation and the four guys that are going here, though, in Kluber, Bauer, Salazar, and Clevenger. So how is this one lined? Which way do the lines move? Lots of stuff to unpack here for this series. Nationals and Cubs is another interesting one. You got Tanner Roark and Kyle Hendricks on Friday. To be determined, and John Lackey Saturday. Gio Gonzalez and John Lester on Sunday. Like I said, Lester is a guy that you want to back in that matchup on Sunday against Gio Gonzalez. Cubs avoid Steven Strasburg and Max Scherzer in this series. That's very important for them. Two juggernaut offenses, deep bullpens. Should be a whole lot of fun. I don't have a ton of wagering angles outside of fading Gio Gonzalez on Sunday. But it should be a fun series to follow nevertheless. Mariners and Royals. Giovanni Gallardo, Trevor Cahill tonight. James Paxton, Jason Hamill tomorrow. Felix Hernandez, Danny Duffy Saturday. Erasmo Ramirez, Ian Kennedy on Sunday. I think the pitching matchups aside from tonight line up pretty well for Seattle here in this series. Paxton has the ability to be dominant. Felix has been pitching much better of late. And then Erasmo Ramirez is a guy that kind of a tweener type of guy. He can give you some innings, can give you some pretty good stuff at times. The concern about this series I have is that the Mariners are very inconsistent. The Royals played over their heads for a while, came back to earth now. I don't know what happens in this series, but it's got some playoff implications for that second wildcard spot, really for the first wildcard spot, I guess, too. So this is one to keep an eye on and see what we can take away from these two teams. One more series to look at here, the Dodgers and the Mets. You got Yu Darvish, Jacob deGrom on Friday, Rich Hill, Seth Lugo Saturday, Hyunjin Ryu, and Steven Matz on Sunday. Three different start times in this series. ESPN Sunday Night Baseball for this game coming up here with Ryu and Matz. Both teams are off on Monday. There are only seven games on Monday, so no situational angle coming out of Sunday Night Baseball. But for the Dodgers here, you know, not a tremendous series so far for them in Atlanta. You know, they get Darvish on Friday, which should be interesting to see. But it wouldn't shock me if the Dodgers lost this series. You know, three different start times, way out on the East Coast. You know, major market. A lot of people want to talk about the Dodgers. There's a lot going on here in this series, so it wouldn't shock me if the Mets can find a way to scratch out this series. But you know, obviously you're going to be getting a good price on it if you want to look that up. I do have one situational spot I'm looking at here for Monday. That's a possible fade of the Chicago Cubs. They go all the way out to San Francisco. I'll talk about this one. Actually, I probably won't get to it on the show, so it's a good time to mention it here since we're going to the full daily broadcast next week. You got Jake Arrieta on the hill for the Cubs, Matt Moore for the Giants. Matt Moore has not been good, but big series at home here for the Cubs against the Nationals. People will talk about it as a playoff preview. And then they go all the way out west to San Francisco. Could be a spot there to take the Giants. But again, playing the Giants is a very difficult thing to do. All right. Well, so we've got shows coming up Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week, getting back into our regular Bang the Book Radio format. Again, I'll probably do the Bettors Box on Wednesday. Do that one early again, because like I said, I got friends and family coming in town and all that. So it'll probably be what we do on Wednesday, but we'll have mostly football shows on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday of next week. So that'll be something for you to look forward to. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, smart, and safe weekend. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.